high end over end variety. And Amani from his 45, he's got a lane. And he's got speed. Look out. Beep, beep. The Ducks are in the end zone. Touchdown.
This is the Duck Pod from the Register Guard Newsroom.
Gordon head to head for sure. Mitchell goes in motion. They hand it off.
Straight up.
Oregon sports beat writers Ryan Thorburn and Steve Mims.
Welcome to the Duck Pod. Ryan Thorburn here with Ken Woody. Ken, I have a little crow to eat. I think you do too. We both picked Utah to win the Pac-12 championship. I don't think we were alone in that, but Oregon dominated the game 37-15. The Oregon Ducks are your 2019 Pac-12 champions. They're headed to the Rose Bowl to play Wisconsin on January 1st. Quite a season for the Ducks. They came out and dominated a really good defense, and defensively they dominated Utah's offense, which had one of the more efficient quarterbacks in the country and a great running back in Zach Moss. I was surprised with the way the game went, not necessarily that Oregon pulled out any type of win, but that the fact that they pushed Utah around surprised me and Kyle Whittingham. What was it like for you to watch that game?
Well, I would say that I did pick Utah to win, but I did have a caveat, and that was if they did some things that they were capable of doing that they had done some before, and a lot of that had to do with Herbert. But the first drive, stopping Utah on fourth down was big time, and they stopped them on third and one and fourth and one, and it was right. That was a big emotional deal, and always going for it on fourth down is a psychological thing. For the guys that go for it and don't make it, it's a big disappointment. For the guys that hold them, and plus they got pretty good field position out of it, it's a heck of a deal. And then when I saw Herbert run the option a couple times the first drive, I went, all right.
I thought of you when he started doing that.
I know, I've been complaining all year, but you're right. And the Ducks, they had their way with Utah, but it was not going to be a game where they start out bumping chests and just running over them. You know, Utah's too good for that. Auburn was too good for that. But the Ducks had some variety to their offense. I thought they showed some things with formations and motion. Well, a couple things were stopped cold, but they were making the defense move around. And, you know, you just don't want defenses to kind of sit in there and know what you're going to do, because if they're real good players like Utah, they'll dominate you. But I, in a way, I feel badly for Whittingham, because I really like him. He's a good man, tough program. But Utah, you know, they're watching films of the Ducks sleepwalk against OSU all week, and it's probably took a little bit of their, not necessarily respect, but their intensity. And as the Ducks found out against ASU, winning 10 games in a row is difficult. And it, you know, it's just the Pac-12. You got teams that can score, and on this night, the Ducks were going to score, and so Utah got behind. The third quarter had me a little worried, though. The Ducks seemed to get more conservative on offense, and Utah flexed their muscles. As Whittingham said, they got 37 yards in the third quarter. And so when he went, when he punted on fourth down when they were down by eight, he said, I honestly thought we'd get a stop. And you couldn't blame him, because they were stopping Oregon to that point. But then Verdell got his run, and boy, I'm sure that was one of Mario's Christmas wishes.
My caveat was that all the pressure was on Utah in terms of the Pac-12 champ, or the playoff, carrying the playoff banner for the Pac-12. They'd never won a Pac-12 championship. This was their year. They had the team to do it. And I don't know if the pressure got to them, but clearly Oregon was ready to play and execute their game plan from the jump. And as you mentioned, Utah didn't really regroup until halftime. They fought back a little bit, but just too much of a hill to climb, especially with the way Oregon's offensive line was playing and C.J. Verdell, the way he was running the ball. 208 yards rushing, 3 touchdowns against a defense that had only averaged 56 yards allowed per game on the ground. Just a spectacular performance by the offensive line and Verdell. And not only do you have to have a good game plan to win a game like this, you have to catch a couple breaks. I thought you mentioned that fourth down stop. Brady Breeze made that to start the game, but then he was called for targeting a little bit later, and the review overturned that. If he gets kicked out of that game, he had a monster game. That could change the thing. And Troy Dye also had a questionable hit. I think the quarterback's helmet ducked in to Dye, but it was still a close one. He wasn't ejected or anything, and he ended up having an interception to seal the game. So they did catch a couple breaks. Another one I'm thinking of, the first offensive play of the game, Johnny Johnson got totally blown up by Utah's great safety. It looked like he was going to be hurt. He's not hurt. He played a great game, ran a beautiful route on his touchdown. And that same Utah safety who's so good, his name's escaping me at the moment. I'm sure he's first team all Pac-12, but he ended up getting injured early in that game too and was out. So Oregon caught the breaks. Oregon earned this game, though, and they're the Pac-12 champions.
Well, it's interesting. One of the breaks that you're talking about is that the Pac-12 referees didn't do what they usually do, which is miss a call. And the fact that they reviewed the call, particularly on Breeze, the problem with targeting, and it's great that they're looking for it and so on, and it's really good that they're reviewing it. And the call was correct. Breeze was turning his shoulder into the guy, and the problem is your head's right next to your shoulder, and a lot of times the head is coming in there, but he was not aiming. I'll tell you, the refs missed a play on the fumble where Herbert went back and jumped on it on the 1 yard line.
Forearm shiver.
Yeah, forearm shiver to the head, and I just thought if Herbert had slid, which is basically what he did. He slid in to get the ball. That would have been a targeting call. And they didn't. That's right in front of the ref who's spotting the ball. So, you know, it's a wacky world. If Pac-12 refs are reffing your game, anything can happen. And so a couple times it doesn't go against you, that is a good break. But I will say this. After that first drive, guarantee you that the Utah defensive coaches all had to look at their plan and say, you know what? We've got the backside end or linebacker chasing, and they can go after the dive. They had to eliminate him and say the quarterback is a threat. They're showing that they're willing to use him. I mean, he got 17 yards on their first drive, two separate runs, and then he took off and scrambled. And you know what? He looked like he was having fun running to me, not scared at all. But that took one defender out of their basic defense against the run. And so on the 70-yard run that Verdell made, the backside guy who normally would be in a position could have possibly made that tackle, but he was out there guarding against the potential of a quarterback coming out. So, I mean, that's the reason why I've been extolling the virtue of the play. And it's, you ask any defensive coordinator, they'd say, yeah, it's tough when you can throw the ball and also run the option. And the beauty of it is you don't have to run it a lot. Just I think they only did it between 4 and 6 times, and that's all you needed is the threat. And that really, I think, threw Utah off, and I think it took a little bit of the aggressiveness out of what their plan was. So a great move by the Oregon coaching staff, and I'll tell you, the Oregon defense was so disciplined. Utah had 4 explosion runs of over 10 yards, and the quarterback had 3 of them. Moss only had 1. So that means that in all the carries that Zach Moss, the leading league rusher, had, they were all less than 10 yards. And so the Ducks came to play. They missed some tackles here and there, but they tackled hard. And, of course, so did Utah. It was a hard-hitting game. I think it was just a great job by Oregon and the discipline by the defense, and particularly Brady Breeze. That's as good a game as I've ever seen a safety play. He was everywhere. And when I saw that he had 6 tackles, 3 assists, I'm going, that seemed like half of it, because number 25 was at the point of attack all night long.
Yeah, let's get back to Herbert later, but let's talk about the defense. We've mentioned Breeze, spectacular game. He even topped the great game he had at USC, I thought, which was really a breakout game for him. We mentioned Troy Dye, a great leader on this team. But the guy who really stood out on the binoculars and I'm sure jumped off the television screen is Kayvon Thibodeau. Utah could not block him. And not only that, he chased down Huntley, you know, side to side, vertically. However, amazing considering Huntley's skill set, and you're talking about a big defensive end, his athleticism and nose for the ball and getting around the tackles is off the charts.
It is. And the one time that he brought Huntley down from behind, it reminded me of this horror movie I saw when I was a kid. And this octopus came out with this long tentacle and just grabbed a seaman off the ship. I mean, that's his arm was so long, just boom, and he's gone. And I think that Huntley was really surprised. He felt, hey, I've got open territory here. But Thibodeau blocked a punt. It's really too bad that he didn't anticipate the bounce a little bit, because he was in a position to pick that up and run it in for a touchdown. But there were a lot of other young guys on defense who played really well too. And I think that the Oregon defensive line got a little tired of hearing about the big matchup was the offensive line against Utah's defense, because Oregon's defensive line totally overwhelmed Utah in the end. And I'm great for them. They got good young players there, and Thibodeau is just one of them. They got a bunch of others.
They did, and Utah, they get, you know, all the attention for their defense, because I think they're entire defensive line, four guys are going to be drafted in the NFL. But when you look at their offense, Huntley, as I mentioned, was so efficient this year, only had two interceptions all season, had two in this game. Oregon held him in check, obviously. And then Zach Moss is the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year, the leading rusher in the Pac-12. They held him basically in check. Obviously, Verdell had a monster game. Moss, a relatively quiet game. So, yeah, I mean, Utah had weapons on offense, and they were muted.
They really were. Oregon did a nice job. The defense, the one thing I've complained about at times this year is the pass rushers not getting their hands up. They did a great job of that throughout the game. And as the game wore on, Huntley became more and more inaccurate, and a lot of it was he was running around, he couldn't set up, and then there were times he could set up when their hands up there, and I think sometimes defensive linemen just do not value or appreciate how much that helps the guys in the secondary. You know, balls overthrown, that ball that Dye picked off, there was some pressure on that one, and the interception that Breeze had on TV, they had the replay from behind, and you could see what Huntley was looking at. I've coached quarterbacks before, but I watched Breeze, and I'm keying him. I would have thrown it to that guy too. He did a great job of maintaining leverage on a post that was going to come in front of him, but he didn't commit to it, and at the same time it looked like he was. And when that ball was in the air, Breeze broke on it, and that's a guy who's got a real natural inclination for being a safety. And I know that he was frustrated early part of the season because he wasn't starting, and then Pickett was eliminated for a half because of a targeting call. And boy, did that give him a boost, a chance to show what he felt he could do all along. And I've known him and have been aware of him since high school. He's just a really, really good football player.
Yeah, Brady is also a good guy for the media to talk to. He's very... And I'm not going to say outspoken, but he'll come up with more than cliches, and he's kind of a laid-back Oregonian, let's say.
I'll say he is outspoken. When he's had a couple unsportsmanlike late hits on
right.
punts and kickoffs and so on. I was at a practice once, and he went by, and I said, "Hey, Brady, how you doing?" And it was the point where he could kind of stop and for about 40 seconds and talk. And I said, "Hey, you got to watch it out there." And he said, "Yeah, I need to be setting a better example, don't I?" I said, "Yes, you do." And he does, because he's so much around the ball. A guy like that needs to be playing it straight and letting everybody else see that's the way to do it.
Well, speaking of guys you pay attention to, Camden Lewis came through with three made field goals in this game. You know, we've talked ad nauseum about his highs and lows this year. You know, some of the lows, Auburn. Some of the highs, beating Washington State, and then he had a really slow finish to the season. Shaky, I would say. But he came through. I mean, three field goals. They needed those points to stave off that comeback a little bit. What do you make of his confidence level going forward now?
Well, you're saying the right things after the game, saying I didn't give up. And I've seen in practice where they end the practice where the whole team gathers around and is harassing the kickers while they kick. And, you know, although that is pressure, my feeling is earlier in the year he needed more opportunities. And I think in a spring game they could do a better job. But, you know, he's saying the right things. And he's got the viewing audience freaked out because when he kicks from the right hash mark and the TV camera's in the middle, the ball can go, you know, just down the middle or slightly off, but it looks like it's barely making it. And everyone freaks out. Oh, he almost missed. I mean, his second kick, he hit it fat because a piece of turf went up with his shoe. And that's the one that kind of wiggled unceremoniously through. But he was directing it and in a good way. And I think a lot of it is just he's got to discipline himself to the mechanics of what he's doing. And the follow-through is really, from what I've seen of other good soccer kickers, that's where he can be more disciplined. And other than that, he's got everything. His kickoffs were good. And one of the times that Utah did get one decent return, but a lot of times during the season, teams that have dared to return it have not got it up to the 25, and that's nice. You want to, you got guys like Brady Breeze and Juwan Johnson on the kickoff team. If you can just let them run down the field and watch them fair catch, that's all the better. The fewer hits, the better for your better players.
Yeah, just to give you a picture of the post game. For games like this, the locker room's open. Usually it's closed. So it was obvious that Oregon hadn't played in a big game for a while because they were all shocked that the media was in the locker room. Like, what are they doing in here? It's like, well, it's the Pac-12 championship. We're allowed in here. So the first guy I did talk to was Lewis. I just wanted to, people were surrounding, obviously, Herbert and other people. I wanted to get him first and then move on. But he was in a really good mood to deliver like that. I know it wasn't a game win or anything, but he came through, and so did Blake Maimon. That bad snap where there was a miscommunication between Hansen and Herbert. Herbert goes back, dives on it at their own one, gets the forearm shiver. That could have been a disaster. That could have helped Utah complete the comeback. But then Blake Maimon, he's had a great year punting, just sends a rocket to get the momentum slightly back or give the defense a chance to stop the bleeding. I thought that was another unsung hero moment.
You're right, and I saw that he made second team all-conference. I think he's the best punter in the conference. And, you know, a lot of people will look at the average or the net punt. You look at where he's put the ball out of bounds inside the 20, he's gold. And the guys that will say that the most play defense. They come out, and the ball's inside the other team's 20. You know, statistically, there's a much higher percentage that you're going to stop that team on a drive than if the ball went out of bounds on the 35 or 40-yard line. So I think he did great. And Camden, he's got all the tools. There's nothing else that he needs to do but just become consistent. And that's part of his thought process. And I've got a lot of confidence, mostly because I know he can do what he's trying to do. Just you got to do it.
All right, well, let's take our first break.
Hi there, it's Les Schwab Tires. You know, we've been helping keep folks safe on the road around here since 1952. That's why you can save up to $152 on a set of four select light truck and SUV tires during our fall tire sale. So swing by or book an appointment at LesSchwab.com. Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952. Limited time offer while supplies last. Discount depends on tire size and type. Cannot be combined with other offers. Details at LesSchwab.com.
All right, Ken. Oregon is the Pac-12 champion, but they did not land a lot of players on the All-Pac-12 team. They have two first-team players, Penei Sewell, the left tackle, obviously, one of the great linemen in the country, and Brady Breeze for special teams. Herbert did not make the first or second team. Shane Lemieux, Dye, did make the second team, along with, who am I missing here?
Hansen?
No, Hansen was honorable mention. Let's see. Oh, Verdell was second team. I think the real guy who was should be on, maybe even the first team, is Calvin Throckmorton. What do you think of the All-Pac-12 team?
Well, first of all, as a former coach, I don't think a lot of it.
Right. This is, by the way, the coaches voted on this.
Well, and I would spend a little more time extolling the virtues of a vote by coaches rather than sports writers. But,
yeah.
You know, in the end...
Well, I wouldn't actually, because the AP one's going to come out next week. It'll probably have Lemieux and Throckmorton and Sewell all possibly on the first team, if not all on the second team.
They could be.
So sports writers aren't complete idiots. I'm sure Justin Herbert will be the All-Pac-12 quarterback. We'll see. It could be Huntley.
Well, you can figure that there is a guy who's on the first team who shouldn't be, and there's a guy on the second team that should be on the first, and there might be more than those kind of accolades. But I think that the way Mario, I've observed how he runs the program, that individual brilliance is not a big focus.
Right.
It's not a central focus. And, you know, it's just like every head coach's team reflects where that head coach came from. Mario Cristobal is an offensive lineman, and look at Panay Sewell. I mean, he's got a better chance of getting a Heisman Trophy than, you know, a lot of other people that might be deserving of it. At Utah, the guys that get a lot of the credit are the defensive guys. And guess what Whittingham used to coach and what he played. And so a lot of these offensive teams, you look at the head coaches, and like the guy at Oklahoma, you know, he's quarterback. And so it's interesting that teams reflect that. But I think Mario's really done a fabulous job of bringing together guys in a sport that it's not quite as individualistic as basketball is, but they come and they're devoted to the team. And so they'll tell you, it doesn't matter if I make all conference or not. All that matters is that we win. And you see that play it out. I think that's nice. I'm not sure. I think it's more for the fans than me. And so, but I admire that that's what Cristobal has done. And that there are other programs where you can just see the way guys act and so on. It's all about me. And, you know, we get tired of that. That's basketball is that sport.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about Marcus Arroyo and the job he's done this season and last season? He's the offensive coordinator. Obviously, there's reports that UNLV was close to a deal to make him their head coach. We're taping this on Tuesday. I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not, but clearly he's, you know, a candidate for some of these Mountain West level jobs right now. And, you know, if they were watching the Pac-12 championship, I'm sure that didn't hurt. You know, I get a lot of comments from fans that are, you know, I'd say 95% negative about Marcus. Just your thoughts on the job he's done.
Well, I was very critical, too, until about game three of the season. And then I started thinking that, no, that, and you know, it's just like a CEO of a company. They may not be doing the work, but they're responsible for how the work is being done. So if you have any complaints about the offense, mail your letter to Coach Cristobal. Now, on the other hand, if you have an offensive coordinator, most teams that have good offenses, the head coach has given that responsibility totally, or is totally bought in to the viewpoint of the offensive coordinator, and vice versa. After the third game, the Ducks started showing a little bit of pizzazz in the offense, and Cristobal had made the comment, well, in the paper, your paper, our paper, that Arroyo had called a good game. That's the first time I'd ever heard anything that it wasn't him. And it wasn't him going around saying, I'm calling the plays, but you just assumed that. And he had also mentioned in a interview with somebody that he had relaxed his, I don't know if the word he used was control, or influence, whatever, but it seemed that he was giving Arroyo more room to work. And so the offense marched on, and you know, there were times when you go, wow, that's a, you know, it's like that in motion play where the Dylan Mitchell last year went halfway and then came around back. It was very, you know, clever, creative play. Ducks ran that three times this year, two touchdowns, and another one was the fumble at the pylon. And so, hey, those are good plays called at the best time. But there are sometimes down and distance situation calls just leave you scratching your head. What'd you think to do there? And so I think I think if I could speak privately with Marcus, he might tell me that there's some frustration in being the offensive coordinator for a head coach who is so bought into doing things a certain way. And
I think you're right. I think, you know, obviously Marcus is the play caller, but he's very well aware of what the head coach's philosophy is. He's an offensive line coach. That's the strength of the team. Even if it's not working, they want to run the ball between the tackles and wear teams down and own the line of scrimmage. It worked against Utah to perfection. You know, who knows what it would be if Arroyo were in charge. I think you'd see a lot more Herbert being utilized in an offense similar to what Joe Burrow's doing or something like that. But we'll never know. It's been a good marriage. I mean, they've won 20 games together in two years in the Pac-12.
Can't argue with that. The thing about it, though, is that then you look at the play of the quarterback. You see Herbert, who in my mind, you look at some of the passes he missed, even in the Utah game. He does not throw an accurate ball, deep ball, down the sideline. He's pretty good on posts and those kinds of things. But he had the same quarterback coach for 3 years and, in my mind, didn't get any better. And if you talk to pro scouts, the one thing, well, they might question two things. One, how assertive a leader Herbert can and needs to be. And the second is his accuracy. And there are times when, wow, he can hit a Nats rear end from 40 yards, and there's other times the ball kind of sails out of bounds. And I just think that's coaching, too. Because you look at that freshman quarterback at ASU, Daniels, he steps back and throws as good a deep ball as I've ever seen. I've watched Herbert as an athlete playing basketball, how he moves around. That was good. That's good material to work with, and I would expect that he would be better in that. And so that's part of the responsibility of the offensive coordinator, too. So in that part, the jury would be out.
Yeah, I had a chance to spend some time with Justin the week after the Arizona State game. I had a chance to spend some time with his dad, talk to his brother. This past Sunday, we had an A1 story on Justin and kind of his legacy from Sheldon, under-recruited Sheldon prospect to Pac-12 champion. I think that is his legacy. He is an Oregon person through and through, and he won the Pac-12 championship. And even though I talked to him, you know, pretty soon after that biting loss to Arizona State, he was upbeat because the Civil War means a lot to him. The Pac-12 championship means a lot to him. And I know playing in the Rose Bowl is something that was on his bucket list. So I guess I shouldn't have been surprised that Oregon was ready to play for the Rose Bowl the way they did, because he's their leader, and the playoff being out of it, I don't think that really bothered him too much. I don't think not being invited to the Heisman Trophy ceremony bothered him too much. He's in New York for, you know, the National Scholar Award. That means more to him. So he's a very interesting person. How do you kind of view his career and legacy at Oregon?
Interesting question, because I was reminded of this just today, that at times when you have a burr under your saddle, you tend to kind of concentrate and focus on that, and it keeps you from remembering or appreciating all the good things. And you could be critical of his long pass and some of those things, and then you look at the statistics and he's had a great year and a great career, and he's been the guy running the show when they've won all these games. So we need to appreciate that. And that's, you know, okay, so maybe in the pros he's going to work out his deep pass, or maybe he'll decide to sign a baseball contract and pitch for the Yankees, or maybe he'll go be a doctor. But whatever he goes and does, he's going to be a star, because he's just that kind of kid. His family done a wonderful job of bringing him up with a set of values, and he appreciates that. That's the thing that is so cool, because sometimes he makes me feel guilty that I am bothered by the fact that he doesn't throw a deep ball all the time. Right. And, you know, it's as a coach, you see it, hey, and then if you hit one, well, you should be able to hit two and then three, and then you forget, wow, all the other things that he does.
I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think Justin listens to the podcast, but it's funny because, you know, when I sat down with him. I said, "Do you remember our first conversation?" I met him in the courtyard there at the complex before signing day. He was still at Sheldon, you know, just to do a story on local kid signs with Oregon, you know, realize his dream basically. And he said, "Yeah, I remember that. I think I told you when I'm a junior or senior, I hope to get a few snaps, you know, just to say I've taken snaps at Oregon, my dream school." So obviously, when you get have that mindset going in, you're the lowest rated quarterback out of two in your recruiting class. You have Dakota Prukup coming in. You have Travis Johnson. You have, you know, you're basically fourth on the depth chart going in with the anticipation to redshirt, develop, maybe play as an upperclassman. The fact that he was thrown in 2016, had three different head coaches, it's all amazing, really, that he came out of the wash as still, I think he'll be picked in the top 10.
He was fortunate that he came to Oregon at the time where there was chaos, because it gave him a chance to go in there. You know, if he, let's say he's at going to LSU and Joe Burrow's ahead of you, there's some, you know, you may sit for a year or two or whatever. So he got, you know, and everyone we all criticized how Oregon was handling the transition of quarterbacks. And, you know, Helfrich almost missed on Herbert, because as they went down the stretch of recruiting Washington, the word was that Washington was going to get him.
Yeah, it's in my story. Chris Peterson and Jonathan Smith actually came down to watch Justin throw at a Sheldon practice. But Justin had left the screws in his leg from his junior year when he broke his leg, and because he wanted to make sure he would play baseball instead of having surgery. So he had just recently had the screws finally taken out when they saw him throw, and he was not doing well, and they thought, you know, what's the big deal here? So Washington was interested, but their look at him wasn't the real Justin. And then, you know, obviously he had FCS offers like his older brother did.
Montana State.
Yeah. But once Nevada, FBS team, you know, flew in private jet and said, "We've got the steal of the century here," then Scott Frost and Helfrich called him that same night, and it was history. But the other thing that struck me about our conversation, or what I remember about it, is his older brother Mitchell, you know, Montana State, really good receiver at Montana State, super bright like Justin, is going to be going to medical school next year. And one of the places he applied is Harvard, which is in Boston. And you know, Mitchell has also applied, you know, around the country in different cities where there happen to be NFL franchises that may be in need of a quarterback, just in case. But what was funny is Justin said, "Yeah, he might go to Harvard. I don't know why he wants to get so far away from us." And I was thinking, do you even realize yet what's in store for you with the combine, the draft, and that you're going to be the face, the most recognized guy in a major NFL city in the near future? I really don't think it's sunk in for him, and I don't think it will until after the Rose Bowl when he starts that process.
Well, it will be interesting to hear it, get the feedback from scouts, because he'll get that, and they shoot you. Teams will have you come and work out, and you may get some coaching there that can be of help. But yeah, he's probably a little naive in that way. I just hope, should he acquiesce to being a pro, that he gets with a team that it has a stable ownership,
yeah,
and coaching. And this is what's really hurt Mariota.
That's the key. You look at Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, they were on the bottom end of that five-man class a couple years ago that was so touted. The guys that were drafted early to bad teams are struggling: Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Rosen, etc. So, you know, if his stock does drop a little bit, I think that's a good, if you can go back up Philip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady for a year, that's the ideal situation. But I think once he goes to that combine, they see how big this kid is, how athletic he is, how smart he is. You know, they may nitpick with the not being vocal thing or some of the accuracy issues you talk about, but you know they're going to be wowed, and someone's going to trade up and get him.
Well, his accuracy issues can be. It's not congenital. I mean, those can be developed, and you need a good quarterback coach. The a scouting friend of mine. He was a senior scout. He's now retired. But I asked him, what is all the scouts like? Why do they like Herbert? And he goes, 6'6". That's what he said, 6'6", the size. And he said that, you know, he noted that there are some accuracy issues. And he said the same thing about Mariota after Mariota's first year. They're concerned about, and Mariota ended up being a pretty accurate passer. But the thing that he also said is the worst coach position in the National Football League is quarterback. And, well, why? And he said, well, a lot of them are the offensive coordinators, and so they're worried about this play, this play, this play. And use an example, Brett Favre, at the end of his career, on a pass, he would sling the ball down by his hip and then bring it up in this big circular gunslinger kind of. And he could get four touchdown passes in a game. He could also get four interceptions because as he's doing that long arm delivery, well, I'm sure his coach is going, well, I got Brett Favre here. Am I going to change him? Maybe Brett doesn't want to change. Or maybe, I don't know, he should change, whatever. But just, I hope he gets a good quarterback coach, and that's really, really important. And I guess the other thing I worry about a little bit, and this happened to Harrington, and I think at times with Mariota, is that if you come across as just this really nice guy, soft-spoken, you're thought of as weak. And they called Harrington Sunshine Joey in Detroit. He had the worst group of receivers ever. They dropped the ball. They were quitters. I mean, they were just a bad group. He would never criticize them. And guys would, you know, guys like you would say, well, what do you think they got to work on? Hey, they're working real hard, da-da-da-da-da. And it's just like Joey Harrington's weak. He's not a great quarterback. And so I hope that should he go on, that he doesn't run into that, because he's as good a guy as there will ever be.
All right, well, before we get out of here, and we'll probably do another podcast before the Rose Bowl getting into that game in greater detail, but just what are your initial thoughts on Oregon-Wisconsin? It appears to be, to me, a really good matchup, two teams that love to run the ball and be physical, and I think it'll be a really close game. Should be a really good game.
I think it'll be a good game. The one thing, if the Ducks are going to win, they better hold the running back to 125 yards or less. And I think the quarterback, the Ducks had a great victory over Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, and Russell Wilson was the guy. Yeah, in that case, the quarterback could win the game. I don't know that Wisconsin's quarterback's a great one, but he is good, very statistically good. But they are a rough group of guys. And it's just like Utah. You're not going to go in and just bump them with your chest and have your way. They're going to do that to you or try to find a way to do it. Their running back has got 1,900 yards, almost 2,000, 29 touchdowns. And that, you know, they play a pretty good schedule. So there'll be a test there. I think that offensively, if Oregon does what they could do, they're going to need to be creative, because that's how you use your skill guys. But Oregon has skill guys that they could win that game. But I don't think they can just show up and win it. They're going to have to play 60 hard minutes and see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Moss is really good. Jonathan Taylor is great. He should be in New York for the Heisman. He's not. It's a quarterback award, whatever. He's a great player, so that'll be we'll preview that game in more detail. So thanks so much for tuning in all year. It's been great having Ken come in to break down this season. It's turned out to be a memorable season for Oregon, and we appreciate you guys following us at ducksports.com, and happy holidays, and we'll talk to you soon.